You're listening to The Record on KUOW, and I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds. The fiscal year ends September 30th, and without a budget agreement before that, the government could face a shutdown. And we've heard about this threat many times before. You may not be taking it that seriously. But whether the government shutdown occurs or not, government agencies are spending time and tax dollars preparing. And joining us now with a look at how the planning process is affecting one federal agency here in Seattle is Jenny Durkin. She's U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Washington. Jenny Durkin, thanks so much for taking the time.
David, thanks for having me.
So what all do you need to do in your office to try to prepare for this possible shutdown?
You know, it's really distracting on a number of levels. Instead of focusing on the work that the taxpayers need us to do, protecting the public, we have to focus on who can show up to work. You know, I'm going to have be in the unfortunate position if we shut down to tell a number of my people, have to stay home, you can't do the work for the public, you won't get paid, and tell other people you have to come in and you won't get paid.
And what would it mean for your office? How many people would be affected?
You know, we are still in the process of getting guidance on that, but each of the drills we've been through, there'll be a number of people who won't show up for work. But that's true across the Justice Department. You know, marshals, FBI, you name it, in the Justice Department, they will have to stay home and not do the work that keeping the public safe. We are focusing, spending time and energy on things that are negative when we should be looking at the positive and what I think the public wants us to do. And also, even if we don't shut down, the cuts that we are taking at some level do not become sustainable. I mean, they really hurt the public, and I think that's an important part of the message that's getting lost.
So how would the public be affected by this potential shutdown, but how is it being affected right now? How are people being affected by the cuts that you've been seeing?
You know, my vacancy rates are increasingly going high, and I can't hire anyone. We have a hiring freeze. And so that means there's less people to come in and every day protect the public. You're seeing the same thing across all agencies. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service only has 200 agents in the whole country to do the important environmental work they do. Other law enforcement agencies we work with, literally their gas money may be rationed, so they can't do things to protect the public. It will affect every aspect of what government does, and a lot of what government does, the public depends on day in, day out.
Jenny Durkin is U.S. Attorney for the Western District here in Washington. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced late last month that the Department of Justice is going to let Washington's rule about recreational marijuana go into effect. I'm wondering what you thought when you first heard that announcement.
You know, I think that this is going to be an experiment for how federal and state partners can work together in a new area of the law. We have never focused our resources on what I would call the lower level offenders, and the state has usually done that. They've now changed their policy. We will continue to do what we do, which is focus most of our resources on really higher level, worst of the worst crime. In the marijuana area, I went with the U.S. Attorney from the Eastern District of Washington to let him know the type of enforcement that we do, what our concerns are. If you look at what the Deputy Attorney General told us, there's some things that jump out. Kids. You can't market or sell to kids. You can't be in school zones. Guns. Guns are a big problem. We've seen an increasing amount of violence associated with so-called dispensaries. That's got to be a bright line. Sales that finance organized crime. So we're hoping to work out those areas to make sure that the feds and the state don't run into each other in enforcement. One thing I think is important for people to know, I hear story after story saying, now that marijuana is legal, I think it's important for people to know it's all still illegal under federal law. And while we will be very careful about how we expend our resources, people have to understand there's some areas like federal lands, courthouses, military bases, national parks. You can't have any. So really know where the line is drawn.
When you think about this new law going forward, what's success going to mean for Washington's recreational marijuana law from your perspective at the Department of Justice?
Here's what I think. I think, you know, just I'll take off my U.S. attorney hat just for a moment. Living in the state of Washington and a mom of two kids, I feel like we've been living through kind of our freshman year of college where it's been the wahoo, it's legal stage. I think it's time to have some very serious conversations on what it means for public health, for child use, for making sure it stays out of the hands of kids. You know, use at school kids is going up, and they're getting it at what's called dispensaries. We have to have the money for treatment. And so this is really going to be an effort to make sure that what was promised to the voters is true. I don't think the voters envisioned that it was anything goes. And so I think the federal government is going to be looking very carefully to make sure that the state lives up to its promises, that they really will have a robust regulatory and enforcement system where they control who gets it and how they get it.
So in terms of treatment and education, similar to where society's gone in some ways on alcohol following prohibition, you think it's maybe headed in that direction. I'm wondering, you know, some observers think this decision suggests a real change at the Department of Justice, that it's a recognition that maybe the old war on drugs at least wasn't working. Is this significant in that way, do you think?
Well, I think if you look at what the Department of Justice has done, at least how we do our work, it won't change what we've done very much because we have never focused on that type of drug activity. I think what it will change is whether the state, in deciding to use its resources differently, whether that will work.
There's also been this question about banks and banking. When you have one of these marijuana businesses, banks are saying, look, it's still illegal under federal law, so we're not going to do business with you. And there's some effort to change that in Congress, but it's not clear where that's growing. How concerned are you about this big cash business emerging in our state?
You know, I think it's a concern to everyone having the cash business. At the same time, you know, the number one thing I think the state can do to get a better banking system is to really make sure that they are having their regulations work. So, for example, they vet who's going to get the licenses. They vet the people who are investing in these businesses, because if you look at the early days of, say, Las Vegas, before there was tight regulation, every mafia family in the country laundered all of their proceeds from illegal activity through Vegas. And so you don't want to create this, you know, this capital market where criminal activity is attracted by what you do. So have the strict regulation first, and then let's talk about how we can make sure that there's some way for banks to take this money without risk. But we don't want to create an avenue for organized crime to be able to clean up its bad proceeds.
What kind of solution could work from the federal government to this whole banking and marijuana cash problem?
You know, I think they're looking at it from another angle. There's, you know, unfortunately, a number of agencies that are involved. It's not just the Justice Department. It's the bank regulators, the FDIC. There's a number of congressional laws. So I think you're going to have to get all people get together. But the number one thing you're going to have is, you know, that this business is really, I don't want to call it a legitimate business because it's not under federal law, but the state has taken very careful controls to make sure they know where every penny has come from and where all the drugs are going. You don't have that on the dispensary side of the house.
Jenny Durkin is U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Washington. I just had one more question on the marijuana thing. One of the concerns by the federal government is some of this marijuana goes from our state to other states. It just seems like a hard thing to track. How will you be looking at that and making sure that it doesn't happen?
You know, we will continue to use all of our law enforcement resources and ways we do to track that. But we're looking to the states. That's one of the things they have promised that they're going to control, is they know what the inventory is and where it's going. So that's one thing we're going to be really looking at the state of Washington to do.
And when you just came in, you said that the Department of Justice has just received a new grant on guns. What can you tell us about that?
We did. Very exciting. We just got a grant called Project Safe Neighborhood, where we have almost $500,000 over the next 2 years to do a comprehensive look at guns in our community. So there will be prevention pieces, work with at-risk youth, a prosecutor in our office to do our continued enforcement on criminals with guns, and a researcher to look at what programs work so that we can build better programs in the future to get guns off the street and take at-risk youth so they're not attracted to that life.
Another question is about the SPD and police reform here in the city. What can you tell us about the process now?
I think we are making great progress. I think at the beginning, for a number of reasons, things were slowed down. But I think that we have Chief Pugel is at the table, talking frankly, trying to see what works. We have a great monitor who's keeping everyone on track. I think the police, the Community Police Commission is fully engaged. So I'm very hopeful. I think that, you know, one thing that was troubling, the work that the monitor did in polling the community, only 35% of all Seattleites think that the Seattle Police Department enforces its powers without regard to race or other attributes. That's a shockingly low number, but it's one of the things that we heard throughout the investigation from our outreach. It's why the Department of Justice insisted that there be biased policing be included in the consent decree, and it's why we were the ones to propose a citizen commission to work with us to keep that engagement ongoing. And so I think this shows that that was wise decision, but also shows how much work we have left to do.
Another stat, it's really the last question we have time for. What do you think of this survey data that shows that 45% of Seattleites still think the SPD is using excessive force?
You know, I think that that shows you that there is both a perception problem, but also people feel that we need a lot of work to do. We have to not only reform what the policies are to use force, but OPA has to be looked at, the agency that looks at how police officers use the force. And we have to reach out to the community so they know what has changed. I think that the best proof of this is going to be how police interact with the public and how the public feels that they do.
All right, Jenny Durkin, thanks so much for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jenny Durkin is U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Washington. You're listening to The Record, and I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds.